talking about beryllium.
Ah, beryllium. All understand instinctively the timeless allure of beryllium. That's where all deranged millionaires put our money, and now, thanks to me, so can you.
Tonight, the Bannister Federal Complex Community Advisory Panel met last Thursday. We'll hear a little bit about the meeting of this group formed in June 2010 to provide independent input on environmental and redevelopment issues at the nuclear weapons parts production site and to act as a communication conduit and forum for stakeholders within the community surrounding the complex that a Sierra Club spokesman has called a festering hellhole. And The New Yorker's Jeffrey Toobin is a grandiose narcissist. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stand by for Tell Somebody. Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us, on Twitter at tellsomebodynow. This is your host, Tom Clammer. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the station or anybody else involved with it. If you have any comments or questions on the show, drop me a line at mail@tellsomebody.us. I want to thank everyone who called in during the show last week or any time during the pledge drive on the phone or on the web with a donation to keep KKFI on the air. Whether or not you were able to make a donation, please think about getting involved with your station. Come to some meetings. Keep an eye on us. Don't let us mess up. More info on meetings at www.kkfi.org. The podcast of last week's Pledge Drive edition of Tell Somebody with UMKC Economics and Law Professor Bill Black has been posted, and I've also posted audio of a discussion Bill Black participated in last April with UMKC Economics Department Chair Stephanie Kelton and other leading economics bloggers from around the country. Go to www.tellsomebody.us and click on a tile for a link to a past show. Bradley Manning's court-martial continues this week. You can find much more information, including links to transcripts, at www.bradleymanning.org. Before getting to the Kansas City plant operated by Honeywell for the NNSA, the National Nuclear Security Administration, a word or two related to the NSA. Depending on who you ask, NSA stands either for National Security Agency or No Such Agency. Of course, there has been a huge amount of coverage of the NSA leaks since the story broke, much of it of the kill-the-messenger category, and a fair amount of what might be called hero worship. I kind of like what attorney Jesselyn Raddick said on a USA Today video from Friday when the question was posed, is former NSA contractor Ed Snowden a hero or a traitor? She said, quote, I don't like these labels, and they're putting people into categories of two extremes, villain or saint. By law, he fits the legal definition of a whistleblower. He is someone who exposed broad waste abuse and, in his case, illegality. And he also said he was making the disclosures for the public good and because he wanted to have a debate. Attorney Raddick herself a whistleblower, appeared with three former top-level NSA officials, Thomas Drake, William Binney, and J. Kirk Wiebe, who have a combined nearly 100 years of intelligence experience. These three have for years tried to raise concerns through proper channels about the NSA overreach and were betrayed, persecuted, and prosecuted by the system. While there was strong criticism about Snowden's later release about U.S. hacking of Chinese computer systems, all agreed that Snowden was a legitimate whistleblower, and all agreed that they won't criticize him for going straight to the press, because they've seen that going through channels just doesn't work. Of all the bloviating in the mainstream media, one example that surprised me a little bit was a blog entry by the New Yorker's Jeffrey Toobin titled, "Edward Snowden is No Hero." I previously knew of Toobin only from his interesting and rather informative writing on the Supreme Court. Toobin writes that Snowden is neither a hero nor a whistleblower, but, quote, rather a grandiose narcissist who belongs in prison. Toobin effectively rebuts his own argument when he derisively says Snowden apparently was answering to a higher calling. Whatever Snowden's flaws, I believe he was. Toobin writes that some leaking, some interaction between reporters and sources who have access to classified information is normal, even indispensable, in a society with a free press. It's not easy to draw the line between those kinds of healthy encounters and the wholesale, reckless dumping of classified information by the likes of Snowden or Bradley Manning. Toobin thanks Snowden, a grandiose narcissist, for daring to draw that line arbitrarily, apparently. But it seems to me that Toobin is himself drawing that line arbitrarily for himself and other polite mainstream journalists whose first calling is to maintain access to the powerful and established, not to inform the public on what they need to know. Toobin says, "Our system offers legal options to disgruntled government employees and contractors. They can take advantage of federal whistleblower laws. They can bring their complaints to Congress. They can try to protest within the institutions where they work." Yeah, right. The experiences of Jesselyn Raddick, Thomas Drake, William Binney, and J. Kirk Wiebe demonstrate that that just doesn't work. The federal whistleblower laws are broken, Congress is corrupt and or inept, and polite mainstream journalists like Toobin enable that abuse by their silence. Toobin has allied himself in this Snowden matter with the likes of John Yoo and other Bush administration war criminals. Jeffrey Toobin is a grandiose narcissist. On with the show. From the NSA to the NNSA now and the Kansas City plant. As noted in the intro, the Community Advisory Panel for the Bannister Federal Complex met last Thursday discussing plans for the disposition of the highly contaminated site. There's just too much involved here to properly put it all into context in one show. I would invite you to type Kansas City Plant or NNSA or Community Advisory Panel into the search box at tellsomebody.us for more information. For now, I want to jump to a point in the meeting where CAP member Steve Rennie mentions beryllium.
This is not a question. This is a comment for, you know, the people that are going to be communicating to the public. There's been a couple of buzzwords that go around here that I think around this site, and it's been reported on the television stations and on in the paper, one of the buzzwords is beryllium.
Beryllium, one of at least 898 toxic substances identified as being used at the Kansas City plant over the years. Recently, on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, there was a segment poking fun at all those commercials that pushed the sale of gold coins and trinkets as a hedge against inflation and Armageddon.
Gold! It's the ultimate fear hedge. When the dollar fails and the world plunges into a dystopian nightmare of vicious tribes warring for dwindling necessities, you'll always have gold.
You are still a millionaire, right? You are still a millionaire, right? Or did you lose it all in gold?
John, I'm no rube. What would I want with some tawdry nugget that any smelly prospector with a pan can scoop out of a country crick?
I know. The whole thing, it's ridiculous to think this random substance has some intrinsic value that's immune to market forces.
It's completely ridiculous,
Thank
John.
You.
I
Thank
mean,
you.
Gold, it's no beryllium.
Yes, it's what? Beryllium?
Yes, that's a different random substance. But this one is immune to market forces. Here, let me show you on my periodic table of invest elements. Now, here is gold. That is garbage.
39, yeah.
Platinum and silver go in the same way.
Sure.
So what do you want to invest in, John?
Helium is always fun. Parties, I guess.
Helium. You can't make a commemorative coin out of helium. First rule of invest elements, John. Noble gases, bull returns. Goodbye.
But beryllium, you're talking about beryllium.
Ah, beryllium. All understand instinctively the timeless allure of beryllium. That's where all deranged millionaires put our money, and now, thanks to me, so can you. Oh, hey, I'm John Hodgman for Beryllium. You know, don't let people scare you into buying gold. Let me scare you into buying beryllium. Prized by human civilization since 1957 for its drab gray color, beryllium is as versatile as it is solid. Look at these beautiful dimes. Now that I've coated them in rare beryllium dust, I'm selling them for $300,000. Now, beryllium's not just for coating coins. It can also be fashioned into some beautiful jewelry. Beryllium. Invest in the future.
Caution, do not fashion into beautiful jewelry. Beryllium is highly corrosive to human skin. Beryllium is a Category 1 carcinogen. Inhalation of beryllium dust causes a lung disease known as berylliosis.
It's burning my hand!
Wow, that's an intriguing product. I can't help noticing you're losing some hair now.
Well, the risks are outlined. Another molar. So, how much beryllium can I put you down for, John?
All right, I'll get back to you. Thank you very much. John Hodgman, everybody. We'll be right back. John Hodgman.
Back to the Bannister cap.
One of the buzzwords is beryllium. Another that we just heard is depleted uranium. And I'm a chemical engineer. I know where to look up stuff. I know what an MSDS is. There's a need to educate. There's a need to educate people what those materials are, what kind of safeties are involved, what the dangers are, and that needs to be, I think that needs to be done to remove a lot of the fear and suspicion out of here. I think it would diffuse a lot of things if they knew actually what the materials were. Mm-hmm.
If you're interested, that's Section 7 of the DCPR.
Okay.
Steve Rennie mentioned MSDS. That stands for Material Safety Data Sheet. Documents intended to provide workers and emergency personnel with procedures for handling or working with substances in a safe manner. Doing an internet search for beryllium MSDS, one of the first links to pop up was this, the Electronic Library of Construction Occupational Safety and Health Beryllium Fact Sheet. Beryllium is a very lightweight, strong, and hard metal that is easy to shape. The Department of Energy has used beryllium for a long time because of its many uses in nuclear weapons and reactors. chronic beryllium disease, or CBD. Breathing beryllium particles can lead to scarring of the lungs. This is known as chronic beryllium disease, CBD. It can be treated, but it cannot be cured. It is sometimes fatal. CBD is primarily a lung disease, but it may also affect the lymph nodes, skin, spleen, liver, kidneys, and heart. Among construction workers at DOE facilities, less than 1% have been found to have CBD. In jobs where people inhaled the most beryllium, such as machinists in beryllium operations, 10 to 14% of the workers have gotten chronic beryllium disease. CBD can take years to develop after the first exposure to beryllium. The average time is 10 to 15 years. Sometimes it takes as long as 30 years to show up. Chronic beryllium disease can cause persistent coughing, shortness of breath, chest pain, fever, night sweats, blood in the sputum, rapid heartbeat, loss of appetite, and weight loss. If you have been exposed to beryllium and you have any of these symptoms, you should tell your doctor about your beryllium exposure or seek help from a doctor who specializes in occupational lung diseases. Workers in some beryllium-producing plants have had an increased rate of lung cancer. Beryllium is classified as a cause of cancer in humans by the International Agency for Research on Cancer and by the American Conference of Governmental Industrial Hygienists. It is not possible to determine your exact risk for developing beryllium disease, but listed below are some general guidelines that you can follow to lessen your exposure. Avoid breathing beryllium dust or fumes by working in well-ventilated, well-exhausted areas where beryllium monitoring is done routinely. Use all ventilation and exhaust equipment available in order to reduce exposures to the lowest possible level. Whenever possible, work with non-beryllium metals, alloys, ceramics, and salts. Do not eat or drink or smoke in areas where beryllium is used. Before entering work areas where beryllium is used, change into work clothes, including shirt, pants, and shoes. At the end of the work shift, take a shower and thoroughly clean your hands and hair before changing into street clothing. Use approved respirators for tasks that may result in high exposures. Avoid generating beryllium dust unless the process is well protected and has been sampled for exposure levels. The dangers of beryllium have been known at least since the late 40s, and numerous Kansas City plant workers have told how it was used at Bannister without precautions or safety procedures and equipment. Let's go now to some more audio from the CAP meeting.
You know, what is the cleanup? Well, the city will pass a resolution and explain to the NNSA and everyone as to what they feel the cleanup is. They passed a resolution on the cleanup. So I think we ought to get the cities involved in here someplace. They have a resolution. They could tell us, people could tell us what they think or what they're going to do. Does it go along with the resolution that's been passed by the city council 12 months?
That was CAP member and former plant worker Maurice Copeland speaking. The city council measure he referred to was passed last February. Councilman John Sharp talked about it at a public hearing held at the IBEW Union Hall in South Kansas City regarding the economic assessment of the Bannister site undertaking in lieu of an environmental impact statement on March 5, 2013. Give a listen now to Kansas City, Missouri Councilman John Sharp.
Thank you very much. I'm John Sharp, member of the City Council, Kansas City, Missouri, a resident of South Kansas City. I would like to make some very brief comments and did want to mention on February 23rd, 2012, The City Council unanimously passed Resolution 120186, which I sponsored, and which was co-sponsored by Mayor James, Mayor Pro Tem Serco, and Councilman Brooks, dealing with the process of the reuse of the Bannister Federal Complex, and it contained four main points. Now, at that point in time, we still thought there would be an environmental impact statement for this process instead of just the environmental assessment. But the four main points still are valid, and would like to cover them tonight. The first point in the resolution, which was passed unanimously, was that a transfer for private redevelopment is preferable to keeping the site under federal ownership, just sitting there boarded up. As I recall, driving in the northeastern part of the city, we've got a great example of what happens if a site is not properly and promptly reused after the federal government quits using it, and it has the potential of becoming a blighting influence on an area for decades. So the resolution we passed unanimously said that redevelopment is much preferable to keeping the vacated site under federal site stewardship. Second point was that mixed use of the site should be considered. Now, our resolution said that could include industrial and office, which your environmental assessment says is a likely reuse. It also mentioned retail and residential as possible uses that could be considered. Now, we understand that the notice of availability resulted in no proposals from developers mentioning a retail or residential or parkland component for this site. And I think we all also realize that if a residential use would be contemplated, the extent of cleanup activities would be more significant than if it's just for an industrial or office use. However, to say that there would be no likely retail use on a 300-acre site that fronts on two major thoroughfares does seem to be excessively limiting what the likely reuse would be. So I would hope that as part of this process, the resolution the council unanimously passed, which included more types of mixed use than just industrial, office, and warehouse, could be considered further. Third point in the resolution was that contamination should be eliminated, not just contained, and that demolition of the older buildings on the site needs to occur for the site to be reused for private development. And the fourth point was that the elimination of the contamination of the site and demolition of older buildings needs to be accomplished in a timely manner. And as I'm getting on in years, to me that means while I'm still alive. So that was the fourth point in the resolution. And to speak to two specific findings in the draft environmental assessment, I would refer to section 2.1.1.2 remediation on page 2-3. And this mentions the result of removing contaminated soil as opposed to just containing it. And I would note that this draft says, however, removal of affected soils above the groundwater table could reduce the overall operational time of the groundwater treatment system because the source of groundwater contamination would be significantly reduced. In other words, you get rid of the source, you don't have to keep the treatment system in place for so long. And again, in section 3.5.2.2 groundwater on pages 3-36 and 3-37, it states removal of contaminated soil, whether hot spots or large areas, would reduce the source for further groundwater contamination and thereby increase the chances of the pump and treat system's success. So I think these statements in the draft assessment itself speak to the need to remove this contaminated soil, not just try to contain it. And I hope the final environmental assessment will make that recommendation. But in closing, allow me to say again that it was a unanimous decision of the City Council that a transfer for private redevelopment would be preferable to just see the site sitting there mothballed, where people 20 years from now might see the site looking just like it is now, except boards and windows. This is a site that has significant potential for economic development in South Kansas City. We need to see it redeveloped in a timely manner and not just sitting there decaying as vacant buildings do. I would like to make one further comment. I note that we've said tonight that the description of the current conditions report won't be made until March 25th. And that was to have been done, as I understand it, prior to this meeting tonight, but the 150-day time period was extended by 60 days for that. So that won't be made until after the public comment period of March 14th. I think it would have been preferable if we would have had that report prior to the close of the public comment period, but I understand there will still be an opportunity to make comments as part of the RCRA process after that report is made. So I don't feel it is necessary that we had to have it tonight to make a decision on whether to recommend a transfer of the property or keeping the property under federal stewardship. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. This is a very important decision, not only for South Kansas City, but for all of Kansas City. And I think all of us on the City Council look forward to a speedy transfer of this property, a speedy remediation of the contamination of the property, and a speedy redevelopment of the property so it can be an asset and not a blight on our area. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we have a City Council resolution that's mentioned a couple of more times at this Community Advisory Panel, or CAP, meeting, calling for a prompt cleanup of the Bannister site. But I don't believe it carries any authority. How much will the site be cleaned up, when, by whom, and at what cost? We'll be back with more after you listen to this. Welcome back to Tell Somebody. This is your host, Tom Clammer, and tonight we've been listening to audio from the Community Advisory Panel meeting held at the Bannister Federal Complex last Thursday, talking about the disposition of that site, which has been home to the Kansas City Nuclear Weapons Parts Plant and General Services Administration offices, and is to be vacated. Let's get back to it right now.
I can ask a couple of questions. If you want to redirect the conversation, I thought we had more than one bid to take over this property. At one time, we were told there were 12 bids.
I think my, I'll state this, and if the agency folks correct me if I'm wrong, the NNSA went with one developer based on submissions that were provided, and that no final deal has been consummated, but the process is underway with the selected developer. Did I say that correctly?
They issued, I'm sure there was an action, and they issued a notice of interest or something.
Notice of availability was issued. There were multiple proposals. They were evaluated. CenterPoint, that's how CenterPoint became associated with the project. But no legal agreement or agreement to sell has been reached with CenterPoint. this is an ongoing assessment to see whether or not a transfer can be.
And if I can interject, in fairness to the agencies and the selection process, I think part of the reason they did the notice of availability is because they had heard loud and clear from us, sooner is better than later. And also they determined for a whole host of reasons that the, I can't remember the phrase, not Superfund site, but there's no need to do an overall environmental what? Someone put the words in my mouth.
Environmental impact statement.
Partially because the understanding was clearly no residential on the land, and by not doing the environmental impact statement, but continuing the other process with our friends from DNR, that would allow, ideally, a developer or the developer to come in and come up with some game plans for redevelopment and economic revitalization sooner rather than later. I'm pretty confident, based on what we've heard from CenterPoint or whoever, even if it weren't CenterPoint, no one is going to take that step until they're confident that they won't inherit environmental messes, which goes back to making sure it's cleaned up before that property transfer takes effect. Is that a fair way to say it?
That's a fair term, sure.
But that's in NSA only.
Correct.
Not GSA part of the property.
No, and that was a great point that Carol made about making sure that we're aligned with the two separate dispositions, et cetera. We're not aligned, and we have a fully understanding of the processes and all that, which I think can be pretty simply accomplished in terms of the timeline. Maybe in terms of where they are, maybe before we leave. Certainly, NNSA.
And following up on what Gerard said and Carol said about the environmental impact statement versus the environmental assessment, CERCLA versus RCRA, and that. We don't understand very much about this, and I'm curious. Whether the public would think, oh, if they skipped an environmental impact statement and went to an environmental assessment, does that mean that they're trying to hide something or pull the wool over our eyes? To me, unless it's thoroughly explained, there will be, and totally open about the whole process, that there will be some thought in some folks' mind that they're still not, you know, there's something still not totally disclosed and something to hide.
So a question about that. Do you feel you have that clarification, but you just want to make sure the public has that clarification?
Yes.
Or, okay.
In my opinion, and I've spent 23 years going to manufacturing facilities, and I'm a professional engineer, in my opinion, this is a large machine shop with cutting oils and lubricating oils and solvents and things that have been done at a time when best practices weren't known. And so it's like cleaning up a 60, 70-year-old machine shop. And that can be done. And that's based on my experience of visiting plants and based on my experience lately with some cleanups. It's not an impossible tool. I have a comfort level with that. I can't speak for everybody.
And right. The only thing I would add, I would echo the part about the public wanting some more reassurances, and I suspect the real public questions, and so we're kind of here, A, to push these folks who are listening to go faster rather than slower. B, the public questions were really heightened when GSA moves downtown.
Yeah, I agree with what Steve was saying, because a lot of people have that perspective and view of what Steve just said. This was not a big machine shop. This was a Atomic Energy Commission landfill. So, yeah, we can clean up machine shops. Can we clean up Atomic Energy Commission landfills? So it's going to be that question there. And that hasn't ever been brought out. And I think that some portion of the public should know what specifically, how this plant was used during the days that it was considered Atomic Energy Commission landfill. That was the first designation of this place.
And that's a driving force for your question earlier, is exactly how
it was used. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, to piggyback on his, the perception that people have of what this place is, it's not. It never was.
Right, okay, got it.
I was struck several times by the Fonzie that's in here. What does it mean? No significant
impact.
Yeah. Environmental impact.
It seems
to me to mean that it's all cleaned up and ready to go.
Do you want more clarification on that and why it might have? Okay. So I think we're getting to some really good questions. I want to make sure that we get all of the questions out, but I think we can spend some time getting those questions answered because we have the right people in the room. But I just want to make sure, are we good with, are those the majority of the questions that you have that you would like to hear answered now? If they're prepared for, you know, for Carol.
Well, we can hear answers now, but when it comes time to give the public answers, we have to have a different vocabulary.
Right. We have to have what, Carol?
A different vocabulary.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Layman's vocab, you know, the layman's knowledge, terms, etc., right?
Yeah. You've been watching Happy Days too much. Fonzie is actually the S.
Thank you.
Not a Z.
Oh, gosh. Okay, thank you very much.
And we laugh about it, but that's the sort of thing that would create confusion, and everybody would associate that with Happy Days. And where's Richie? And
yeah, I wrote several things down about acronyms, the need for layman's terms, this public communication and how it needs to be different than maybe the way you have heard things. So I do have several of those comments down. So I appreciate you pulling that out there. Thank you for that. Did you get that vocabulary? Okay.
But yes, that may not be doable.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is my own personal opinion, a heck of a lot of the public view of this being a dump is because Governor Bond, as a senator, called it a dump. And my sense is, how does that change if now he is hired by Sly James to work issues with the federal government? And I don't know, but to me, how you change people's view of something by changing some words or something, particularly with technology going along, it's kind of like, if you haven't got 5,000 tweets, who pays attention to it? You know, you don't know how that works.
So there's a couple of issues there. One is the layman's terms and people understanding and using vocabulary for the public. The other is, can the impression of the property
be changed?
And there's a question, should it? Right, so I hear a different.
I would agree with her. I think that it would be nice if you could get that public view to be what it is in terms of being realistic.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get a positive response to that once we're further along in the process and we actually see redevelopment occurring or announced, planned, et cetera.
What it is, right. With those energy questions. Okay, before we move to a next phase, are there other things that you want to put on the table that, hey, we really need to know this, or I need to get this question answered to be able to feel educated? Yes, sir.
I would like to see this pursuit about this atomic Was there radioactive material on this place?
Okay. Okay, absolutely.
I don't suppose there's anybody that's alive here now that memory goes back that far.
I don't see anybody.
Except for Corey's here.
Well, yes, I worked in it in the department.
It's in your book.
Yeah. We machined uranium in Department 20. They were remediating Department 20 up until 1986. I found out that we were machining uranium in 2013. And if you don't get the gist of that, there's a lot of things that went on in that building that we didn't know was going on, that we were doing specifically. I was machining depleted uranium. It was a machine, and a machine not far from me. They were remediating radioactive material all while I was machining on the same equipment. So yes, there was stuff there that they didn't tell us, and there was stuff that went on here that they're not going to tell you. So you can trust the land as best you can.
So we need that thorough understanding, like you said, of digging a little bit deeper in there. Okay, good.
Were you wearing protective gear or anything?
No.
Well, I just want to make a general comment in relationship to what he said, what Steve said a moment ago. I worked here for a number of years, and one of the things when I went to work here initially in 1957, long time ago, was that it was really a neat place because it not only did machining, it did everything you think of with plastics. No matter how you did that and where you started from, it did everything with electronics, and you did that in terms of making chips and whatever. You know, so it's a significant, about the only thing they didn't do here was casting and forging, and that was it. But everything else you could think of, they knew how to do. So it's a bit more than, you know, just a machining place, but I can appreciate it.
One of my best friends from college came over here and has worked here for all the time, and he was in like the plating department and right. You know what kind of asset was. Yeah. So yes, I'm aware.
Yeah.
Klaus, do you have other questions that haven't been addressed by anybody?
One that just came up in my mind, but I think that might be out of scope here. Is there a list of incidents available and the kind of cleanup action that was taken, but maybe that's in the environmental assessment or kind of worked into that. I'm not sure. I haven't actually looked at the details.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a rather thorough document there. So, and it doesn't read like a novel either.
Incidents and actions taken based on that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know
this. Okay.
Well, that's an important point because of the PCBs. And I think the Missouri guys are going to go out there and check some fish. See, definitely, the next few months, whether it was happening.
And you asked one question, but are there other questions that you have that haven't been addressed that you want to make sure to get?
I'm a retired accountant, so if you can get some positives, that helps. But, you know, when the public approaches you and asks you a certain question, we don't really have... We tell what's going on, but we still get a look like, are you sure that's going? Are you sure?
Yeah. So is it like, what are the positives?
Yeah,
and
we
what
knew
are
this
the...
was a big thing to start with, and we've been trying to get our hands around it. That's fine. But during the three-year process, things have changed, and GSA is still here, things like that. If instead of everybody being gone, it's stretched out over a period of time. So that's very confusing to us. We only meet every few months. And,
I saw that.
And the guys do a great job getting the facts, and the presenters have tried to get it to us. But when a person walks up to you and says, I understand you're on the cap, tell me what you know about what's in the ground.
And yeah.
It's kind of hard to.
You don't hand them the whole study and say, go read it, right? You need those basic points.
We've heard from the experts, and they try to get it in our minds, but we're not engineers.
Exactly.
I am.
Bob, you are.
Okay, others? All right, so this is your meeting, and one of the things that Steve and Gerard expressed to me, you know, is making sure that we get to hear what you all want to talk about before we have all the questions answered or anybody else talking. So are there other things that you would like to put on the table before we kind of go through some of these and get the answers to those things, or what? Where would you like to go right now?
Well, this is a lot like what Chuck just said. This is an actual conversation that I had with somebody after the public meeting, which is in February. And I was, I don't know, you come from another party, and I think you all do know, I was trying to calm them down and trying to remove some of the, not change his mind, but remove some of the belligerence in his tone, and you guys are probably figuring out now. And he said, okay, but what does the cap say about this? And I could honestly say, well, the cap hasn't said anything. And so I think it's, you know, I think it's getting close to time where we need to have something to say. And so that's one of my concerns. People are waiting for us to advise either them or them.
So I have a clarification question about that. Will there be something, I mean, it sounds to me like you've been giving some feedback and sharing some of those things, and hopefully they're taking that into advisement, but will you come up with like an actual statement that this whole group that's diverse makes, or are you here to learn and represent to your folks? I mean, what are you trying to come out with?
I'm looking at our purpose. It specifically says whose members will individually provide input.
Okay. So it's more, it's not going to be like
that. That's not to say we couldn't change our purpose, but that's what we agreed upon in our first meeting, or what our charge was when we were appointed.
Okay. And that's what I'm curious about, Steve, when you say, what is the cap saying? Is the cap a collective? It doesn't sound like the cap is a collective voice, or it wasn't intended to be originally.
It also says that we'll act as a communication conduit and forum for stakeholders. And within the complex and surrounding community. So you can take them both as an individual responsibility or a individual task, but also more as a, you know, a community sort of.
Yes, sir.
What is the date when this place will be totally vacated? Has there been a date?
I think you just added another. You just added another question for discussion.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one. What date will this be making?
He's leaving.
GSA is scheduled to be vacating in before the end of 2014. So November-December time frame of 2014. We hope to have all the other federal tenants on our side of the complex out at that same time or very shortly.
Now what about the NSA? When do they, what's their schedule?
They're moving currently, and I think they're scheduled, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong, to be out in August.
August 2014, that's right.
2014. 14. Before us.
And you'll be out the end of 14.
Okay. And, but this is an important point. When we say how we're talking, terms and definitions are so important here. Out means our production line will be completely taken apart before we move into our new facility.
That's what I mean.
But that's what I mean. Now, of course, the RCRA permit that we've talked about a lot, the environmental cleanup RCRA permit, will stay in effect going forward, and we will need to have a presence here to do our groundwater monitoring and to monitor our systems and to meet our obligations that we have there. Define leaving but that's right. As far as operations in the plant, those will be done in August of 14.
What was that timeline on the end of the operations in the plant?
August of 2014.
And then November or December for TSA. So I think that's very good to be clear about terms, right? Because we're talking about how
let's put this in the driving by perspective. So generally speaking, when I drive down Truce every day to work, I'll see a bunch of cars in the parking lot. So generally speaking, in January of 2015, when I drive down on my way to work, I'll see only maybe more than a handful of cars, but certainly far fewer cars than I see now in the various parking lots. I mean, it'll look pretty big.
Yes, that's right.
But that does not include the Marines on the other side of the railroad tracks, right?
That's correct. They've got an operating agreement to go to 2017, and they're contemplating a longer-term commitment there. That's the 500,000 square feet east of the railroad tracks.
And, guys, that's not scheduled to be disposed of. That property is staying in the government inventory. That
yes, the Marine piece will stay on.
Correct.
Does that include the property south of the?
Yes, whatever GSA owns, that will stay within GSA. Correct. South of
the other side.
Where the levee is.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the city will get an easement across to connect the trails.
We're working on that.
Probably over there.
We're working on that. Yes.
Will you give them money?
Money.
We're talking about.
Okay, it sounds like we're doing a good job.
Place. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Don't leave.
Okay. No, I won't leave.
But what I also would like to do is, in the time, A, we want to finish answering what questions we can answer by 5:45, I will propose, so that we can spend the last 5 or 10 minutes, maybe get out a few minutes early, talking about what we were, where we want to go from here with Mickey's help.
Great. Perfect. Is that okay with everybody? Proceed that way with getting some of these questions answered. We'll do what we can up until 5:45, and then we'll talk about next steps. Okay, so shall we start with the piece and part about the transitioning and the timing, et cetera, that Carol had brought up? I think numerous people had questions about that. Are you all prepared to address that?
Yeah, I can talk about the disposition part. Right now, we're still working with NNSA, and Al, I know, and Mark on the phone would also agree that we're working to do our best to do the property all as one. That is currently in the hands of NNSA and their headquarters to be able to acquire our side to dispose of the property. That is how all of us would like it to go. However, if that is not the way, we are still proceeding down our 49 Act, which is our disposal process of getting all the paperwork in order and everything. So if it doesn't work, we would be able to go down what Steve was talking about. We have to first go to federal agencies, which is what NNSA would be, and they would be able to say, yes, we want the property. If they cannot, then we proceed to the homeowners is our next step. And then we don't foresee the homeless wanting it, this property. So then the next step would be a city municipality that would be willing to do it. And then at that point, I believe that it goes for sale. So we would hope that in a sense, a city agency would be willing to take the property, and the thoughts behind that are work with a developer to be a partner and have the property. As everything has been stated with the RCRA permit, and maybe Eric would correct me if I'm wrong, it would go with the property. We're trying to, GSA and NNSA are ultimately responsible. MDNR and EPA and everybody will not let us off the hook for cleaning it up. We all want the property to be clean. So that is part of the process as well. But our name, GSA's name, will still be on the permit. And just so there's a few little nuances with it, since we're not disposing of 2306, 2312, that is also on the permit as well. So whether we dispose of this side of the property, our name will still, GSA's name will still be on the permit for 2306, 2312, the Marine Corps property.
Okay.
So
let me ask this question. You said something about transferring to a city. But I was under the impression that maybe CenterPoint would take the entire property.
Right. If we go and dispose of the property to NNSA, that is where the property would go.
Okay.
Because CenterPoint is working with NNSA. We can't work directly with CenterPoint on taking our property, because that goes against our disposal processes. And so Well, legally, actually, we can't do that. So that doesn't mean CenterPoint can't work with the city or other
entities,
thank you, to make that happen. So that way they would then be sole owner of the property in the end anyway. It's just through two different processes.
So it could actually go to the city and then for disposal.
Right, if the city is willing,
if the federal government agency doesn't want
to be part of that. Okay. Correct.
And if I understand correctly, the laws that you do things under versus that NNSA is under, they have more flexibility than you do in disposal of property.
Correct.
Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to the podcast edition of Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us. Comments or questions? Send me an email to mail@tellsomebody.us. You can also follow me on Twitter @tellsomebodynow. The Tell Somebody podcast is produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the broadcast of Tell Somebody, heard Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Central Time on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City, streaming around the world at www.kkfi.org. If you haven't heard Tell Somebody before, I hope you'll listen again. Check out the podcast and the broadcast. Click on a tile at www.tellsomebody.us for a link to a past show. If you enjoyed the show and appreciated the information you got from it, please tell somebody about the podcast and the broadcast. Spread the word to your friends and contacts by word of mouth or Facebook, Twitter, email list, or any other way you can think of. Big thanks, as always, to Neela Farmovahedi. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you next week on Tell Somebody.